some in audio from Blue Star Fulfilling Prophecy by Miriam Delicado. Introduction. After an abduction experience in 1988, everything in my world changed forever. In Blue Star, I share with you the events that took place after my encounter with the tall blonde aliens. I attempt to show you how and why I have come to the conclusions I have regarding this contact. And this was not an easy book to write because of the complexity of the story itself. Having no formal education past the 8th grade, I found writing this book was a challenge. Yet, as I began the process of writing, I knew that if I followed my instincts to share my life story as if you were a friend, it would become a complete story. Under the guidance of the aliens, I found I was able to write an entire book, despite my lack of formal education. I chose to share with you the chronological order in which the facts were presented to me. For this reason, you may be asking yourself questions as you begin to read this book, just as I asked myself the same questions. As my story unfolds, you will find answers to those questions, demonstrating how all the facts fit together. One of my main concerns regarding sharing my story has been to protect my family and friends from any unwanted attention. For this reason, I have chosen to change the names of the characters involved with the exception of my own. Furthermore, although the town in which I grew up was in northern British Columbia, I chose the setting of Cranbrook for my book, again to protect the people involved. The real locations of all other events are the true locations. Every piece of information I share in this book comes from my direct knowledge from the aliens or from my actual experience. Every word of this book represents the true events of my life. And there is no part of this story that is fictional in any way. In sharing this story, I am fulfilling a direct request by the aliens. My goal and the goal of the aliens is to open your mind to the truth. We are not alone, they are watching and there is no reason to fear them. Thank you. Miriam Delicado. O Great Spirit. O Great Spirit that lay within. I can hear your heart like the ocean and wind. Gentle like raindrops, powerful as stars. I can feel your beat as it travels far. O Great Spirit that lay within. Teach me the world as it slowly spins. Show me a rainbow from heaven to earth. Teach me to travel without leaving my perch. O Great Spirit that lay within, I'll follow your voice if I hear you sing. Loud and clear the song must be. Help me to follow the great symphony. O Great Spirit that lay within, my heart is as strong as a sacred wind. It dances with nature, calls to the wild, plays with the children and tames the great fire. O Great Spirit that lay within, I've learned the knowledge that comes from within. My spirit it soars with Massa, who it sings. Travels on rainbows as the next stage begins. Miriam Delicado, 1993. The beginning. The date was March 10, 1966 when I made my way into this world. At the time of my birth I had two sisters, Janice who was 4 years old and Carol who was 2. After leaving the hospital I was taken to the home I was to live in for the next 9 years. It was a tiny two-bedroom place, so small that the kitchen, living room and dining area were all in one. It was more like a bachelor suite than a family home, yet everything seems bigger when you are a child. When I was a baby I remember lying in my crib, unable to move very well. I remember looking at my mother and crying, trying very hard to talk to her. But the sounds I wanted wouldn't come out of my mouth. I could sometimes understand what my parents were talking about, but there was no way I could communicate with them. When I was much older, I told both my parents some of the conversations I remembered them having. They were shocked I remembered because I was only a baby at the time. When I graduated from my crib to a bed, I moved into my sister's room. It was tiny and only had enough room for 2 single beds. I had to share a bed with one of my sisters. Usually I slept with Janice, holding on to her as I fell asleep. I wanted to hold on so that if I was taken from my bed I would know, because I wouldn't be able to feel her there anymore. Where I was to be taken, I never knew. It was a powerful feeling that was always in my mind as I fell asleep. My sisters and I didn't have many toys growing up, only one full box and that was it. The three of us had to share all our toys, clothes and beds, nothing belonged to just one of us. A lot of our time was spent playing outside in the farmer's fields, in the bushes that lined the river, on the dry riverbed or climbing trees. We didn't have much so we made our own fun playing with the other kids in the area. The feeling I was somehow different from other people began when I was a young child and continued throughout my life, and wonder about their thoughts. My favorite game was to look at a person and try to figure out what they were thinking. Sometimes what popped into my head was not always positive, and when that happened I would stop trying to see anything else from that person and move on to the next. I feared that I would get in trouble for hearing what they were thinking, but I did it anyway. I gave a lot of thought to my parents from the time I was very young. I couldn't help but think that somehow I was with the wrong family and that one day when I got older I would discover the truth. These people were not related to me. I never felt fully connected to them. When we were young, my father would take us for walks and show us the different plants in the area around our home, explaining what was edible and what wasn't. He talked a lot about how we could survive living off the land. One of my few fond memories of my father was of him carving us flutes out of tree brush as we walked along the river that ran past our home. My father was a controlling man, coming from a strong European background. His idea of family was to raise us with a strong disciplinary hand, and has made our family life difficult and made all of us unhappy. My father was a man that stood out from the crowd no matter where he was or what he was doing. When I was a young child growing up in our small town, it seemed like everyone knew him. They gave him terrible nicknames and my sisters and I would be heckled during school breaks, often brutally hit and pushed as they hollered insults at us about our father. They heckled us because of his teaching of herbal remedies and holistic approach to health and living. The stories he told us as children were often geared towards how to take care of ourselves in the event that the world as we knew it ever came to an end. Survival skills were a constant focus. He told us that one day when everyone else was starving we would be able to eat because we knew what plants in the area were edible. He had us pick herbs that he would then dry out to make tea for different ailments. At the time it was embarrassing and not the normal type of upbringing. My father taught us how to build survival shelters in summer as well as winter. He would quiz us on how to do these things if we ever needed to. The beginning. His knowledge seemed to be endless and it often made no sense to me why he was so determined to teach us all of these strange things. Most times his ramblings were geared towards things I was too young to comprehend. Yet I was forced to listen and learn. He used to point at the mountains surrounding our town of Cranbrook, explaining that if there was nuclear war in the future it would be one of the safest places to be. He told us that if nuclear war ever happened on the other side of the world, the poison in the clouds would follow the Earth's air currents. The nuclear clouds would then have to drop most of their radiation before they could lift high enough to get over the mountains and rain on us. He told my sisters and I this story many times. I didn't know why he thought this, and there was no way to know if his strange ideas were true or not. I didn't understand how any of it had to do with me. I wondered what air currents were and how he knew they would protect us. Instead of telling less of these strange stories, as I got older he began to tell us even more. My mother was a highly intelligent woman who went back to work shortly after I turned 3. Life was not easy for her with my father constantly yelling and berating her. She was forced to listen to his rambling stories also, but never wanted to hear them. My mum was a strong woman and everyone who knew her had a great deal of respect for her. She worked a lot but she always seemed to find the time to bake for us. I have wonderful memories of her making us baked goodies, bread, cakes, donuts and my favorite, cinnamon rolls. In our small community my father was infamous and most people thought he was delusional. He often told people how he was superior because of his genes. As children we were told that we too had these special, superior genes. I never understood what he was talking about or why he would say such a thing. It sounded crazy to my sisters and I, He told me specifically that because I was his daughter I was somehow superior and special. I never understood what he meant by the statement or why he told us the things he did. When we were children we would have to sit quietly as my father talked to his friends for hours about his life. He was very young when he began to fight in the army during the Second World War. He said that he fought for more than one country, France, Italy and Yugoslavia. How this came about I never knew, but it seemed to have ripped his soul in pieces. It most assuredly changed him in a negative way. When he spoke of the war it was often with a great deal of anger and resentment. My father often told a story about being on the streets of Paris during the war when a man approached him. And his man asked him to go and work for what my father called the Russian psychic army. He used to say, "Never ever go with them. What, do they think I'm stupid? You work for them and you can never leave, they will kill you, they own you. You can't hide. And there is nowhere to hide on this planet, they are some of the strongest psychics in the world and they can find you with their minds. They don't need to use a gun to kill you, they do it with their minds. Don't ever go with them. Do you understand?" Of course when he told me this story I told him I understood even though I didn't, not at that time. My sisters had the same lecture regarding these men on many occasions. We knew that our father was psychic because he knew things sometimes that proved to us he had the ability to see the future. He always knew when the phone would ring and who it was before we told him. He told us all the time that he had psychic ability. As we grew older we saw him do little things all the time that proved to us he actually was psychic. As we were growing up, my mother was often busy at work while trying to keep up with the piles of laundry that always seemed to fill our tiny home. By the time I went to grade 1, my father had changed careers due to an accident as a logger. He began working as a bricklayer. And his new career led him and my mother to decided to build a house for Janice, Carol and I. This meant that for the next 3 years after school we had to go help my dad and his friends with this project. We were small helpers but we worked hard. When it got dark the lights of the truck lit our way so we could lay a few more bricks before going home. We often ate our supper at the building site and we sometimes put apples on top of the wood-burning barrel to cook. We kept warm at the fire while the ordinary apples changed to a sweet treat. Always a highlight of our time at the location of our new home. In 1976 we finally moved to our new 4-bedroom, spacious, 2-level home. There was still a lot of work to be done but I felt like we were moving into a mansion. But first I had to share a room with my sister, Carol, because we only had 2 beds. It didn't take long before I got my own room. After sharing a bed with one of my sisters all my life, it was strange to have my own room, let alone my own bed. Almost from the beginning, my family felt there was a presence in the house with us. None of us knew what or who it may be. My sisters and I never wanted to go into the basement alone because we could feel the presence of something down there. We often talked about the feeling we all had and wondered if maybe we had built our home on an ancient burial ground that we were not aware of. Over the next few years, almost everyone who came into our home would have some kind of paranormal experience with this entity. Often my entire family would be kept awake all night by the stomping and dragging sounds in the house and on the stairs. It was awful and it bothered everyone in our home. There were times when the entity would be exceptionally bad. In one such case a friend of my father was staying with us, using the bedroom in the basement. Apparently he was lying on the bed when, all of a sudden, a small ball that was in the room began to jump. It was moving so fast and hard that it hit the ceiling and bounced from the floor to the ceiling over and over. Nothing in the room was moving except the ball and he never touched it. I wasn't home when this happened but heard about it from my family. They said he ran up the stairs, scared to death. He then left the house and told us he wouldn't return to pick up his belongings. We had to pack them up for him because he refused to come anywhere near our home again. The entity would often keep members of my family awake all night with its noise. Sometimes it would go on for days on end with no relief. The strange thing was, I never saw or heard anything, although I could always feel the negative energy in the basement. It was as though it knew better than to mess with me. Often it would act up the strongest when I was not around, and I would hear about its antics later. And this was when my psychic ability began to awaken. Sometimes I would lie in bed at night and have a conversation with this negative energy. When it would act up for long periods of time and keep my family from sleeping, I would do a small ritual to protect us from it. Dear God, I would say, please protect me and my family from whoever or whatever lives in the basement. By universal law, you are not allowed to bother anyone who is of less power than you. So if you go to anyone tonight, you have to go through me. Amen. The next day I would ask my family how they slept. Happily, they would report they slept through the night for the first time in days or, sometimes, weeks. They normally reported that they did not hear or see anything all night. I never told them about my protection prayer. Whenever I woke from a night after this prayer, I would have memories of standing in our basement with red flames across the room that engulfed the other half of the basement. I would stand with my eyes fixed on the flames, repeating a prayer over and over again, not allowing the energy slash entity to pass me. Sometimes I kept up this ritual for days at a time, even though it took a lot out of me. The entity in the basement stayed with our home until I was much older, 23 years old, at which time I did a ritual to have it move on. Again, I did not tell my family what I had done. When I asked Janice if the energy was still around, she happily reported that it seemed to have left and was no longer a bother to anyone. It was only after she told me it left that I informed her of all I had done for our family and her home. The older I got, the more these abilities began to surface. Often I didn't fully understand how they worked, just that they did. When I was in grade 5, my friend Trish and I were sitting in the gymnasium for a school assembly. As usual, we were talking and not paying attention. She was showing me her hands and telling me how embarrassed she was by them. I couldn't blame her. They did look ugly. Small warts covered both her hands from her fingertips to wrists. Trish told me how she had tried everything to get rid of them, but nothing worked. I then told her not to worry, I would take them away for her. Of course, she wondered what I was talking about. I told her, all I have to do is hold your hands for a minute and they will go away. She was doubtful that it would work, but I talked her into letting me try. There I was, in the middle of assembly, holding Trish's hands. I closed my eyes and pictured the warts dissolving and her hands turning smooth and clear. A minute later I opened my eyes and chuckled. Trish asked me what I had done because she could feel her hands tingle while I held them. With a smile on my face, I told her the warts would be gone in about a week. I knew she didn't believe me, but I also knew that in a couple of weeks she would be shocked. Within 2 weeks, Trish saw me in the hallway at school and excitedly showed me her hands. They were no longer covered in warts. The doctor told her that they sometimes suddenly disappear. She didn't want to believe it was my hands that had taken her warts away. I knew that it was my energy that had healed her. I didn't push it. If someone doesn't want to believe in the supernatural, they won't, no matter what you do or say. By the time I was 12 years old, the situation with my father's strong hand was no longer acceptable, and I left home to live in foster care. The next few years I bounced from foster homes to group homes, sometimes running away to stay with friends. And this was a very difficult time in my life. The following year was like a whirlwind of disaster after disaster for me. Drugs and alcohol became part of my way of coping with the stress of my family life. And thankfully, this phase only lasted about 1 year. It didn't take me long to realize that it was not the way I wanted to live my life. When I was 13 years old, I had very few friends. Due to my family life and my strange abilities, I wasn't comfortable with many people. I did, however, share my special gifts with two of my friends, Darlene and Nicole. On one particular night, Darlene and I were very worried about Nicole. No one had seen her for a couple of days, and Darlene asked me if I could use my special ability to find her. Unsure how or if my gift would work, I reluctantly decided to try. I laid down on Darlene's bed and tried to concentrate on Nicole's face. At first I saw only darkness. In the next moment I clearly saw an old blue car traveling on the highway towards the next town over. I knew this because I saw a sign on the side of the road. It was as though I was sitting in the back seat of the car as a passenger. I could see Nicole in the front passenger seat, laughing while an older man, whom I did not recognize, drove. When I opened my eyes, I told Darlene everything I saw, including a description of the man. She didn't know who he was either, and at that point she asked me if Nicole was okay with him. I reassured her that she was all right and would be back safely in a couple of days. I knew this because while I observed them, they talked about how long they would be gone. We waited to hear from Nicole, not only to see if she was okay, but we both wanted to know if my vision was correct or not. And 3 days later, at school, we saw Nicole walking down the hall towards us. She was smiling as she said hello. Without hesitation, Darlene began to ask the many questions we wanted answers to. Where was she the past few days? Who was she with, and why didn't she let us know she was okay? Nicole was not amused by our interrogation. She did, however, confirm that she was in Kimberley, the next town over, with a man that drove a blue car. We then told Nicole why we were asking all the questions. The three of us were taken aback by the accuracy of the whole incident and agreed that it was really strange that I had seen everything with such clarity. Over the next year, many more incidents happened which were just as detailed and accurate as the night with Nicole. Sometimes I would tell people my visions and sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes I would try to see into the future, other times I would have dreams or visions that would simply pop into my mind. No matter how the information came, I found it to be accurate. As 1979 came to an end, I no longer thought I was different. I knew I was. My gifts were becoming as natural as breathing. I began to feel that if I didn't have the gift of sight, I wouldn't feel whole. In some ways it was a curse to see events like a death or an accident, especially when it involved a friend. Although I didn't realize it at the time, it was through all of these experiences I was learning about my gifts as well as who I was. In 1980, at the age of 14, I was living at home for the first time in almost 2 years. 2 months after I got there, my father decided to go on one of his rampages. I quickly chose to leave rather than fight with him, and I went for a long walk in the rain. It was dark and the trees no longer had their leaves. I remember thinking how dismal it all seemed. The heavy downpour soaking me as I walked the streets alone. Something inside me made me stop on the sidewalk and look straight up. As I did, I gave thanks for my life and all I had in it. One day I will help many people, that is what I am here for, and all this will be worth it in the end. Why I was thinking this wasn't clear, but it was a strong and impressive moment in my life. Hours later, cold and tired, I made my way back home. I quickly realized that it was no longer bearable for me to live with my parents, and I made the decision to leave permanently. There was no life for me within the walls of my father's home. It was a decision that changed everything, then and well into my future. Sadly, there were very few options left open for me. Being only 14 years old, it was difficult for me to find work. My father had created problems for himself as well as me with the people at social services, and they, in turn, decided not to give me a place to live. They were afraid of him and, since he wanted me home, they wouldn't place me in protective care. The next few decisions I made were based on survival. There was no way I could convince social services to give me a foster home to live in. My options were limited. Even though I was young, I understood that if I went back home to my father, one of us would not survive. My mind was strong and clear that I would no longer allow him to mistreat me. It was only 3 days after my 14th birthday when it became official that I was completely on my own. The decision to move in with my boyfriend, Darren, was an easy one. He was 6 years older than me, so I knew he would be able to take care of me. I knew living with him was my way out of the hell I lived in with my father. My education was no longer an option since the school I was attending told me that if I was not at home or in a group home, I couldn't attend school. I was hurt and sad that I wouldn't be allowed to attend college either because of my age. The reality of my situation was undeniable, and I knew the decision I made to leave home would be throwing me into a difficult life. No education equals no good jobs and no money. I made the decision with my eyes wide open. Over the next 4 years, Darren and I lived together. I shared with him my psychic ability, but he wasn't interested in talking about it with me. Sometimes I would pass my hand over Darren's back as though I was touching him. Unknown to him, I would have my hand at least 2 inches from his skin. It would tickle him as my hand scanned above his body, even though I was not actually touching him physically. I knew that if he ever found out what I was doing, he wouldn't want me to do it anymore. I practiced using my energy on him to help me gain control over it. My visions and dreams didn't end during this time. There were many psychic incidents that took place over the years, and I often shared them with my older sister, Janice. She couldn't give me any advice on them, but she was always supportive of my gift. One day I woke from a deep sleep very upset. I had had an extremely clear vision of an airplane crash. It was awful. I could see the people in their seats, the plane taking off, the sky, the runway, and many other details. I saw the crash and hundreds of people dead. I shared this vision with Janice. She asked me what airline it was, but I couldn't see the name. She encouraged me to look at the vision again to find more details to the event. Unfortunately, I couldn't see anything more. I was helpless to the vision and didn't understand why I was shown the accident if I couldn't change it. And 3 days later, the news reported a plane crash with over 200 people. It went down with no survivors. I was upset for a long time over the disturbing news. I never understood what the purpose of the vision served. There have been many incidents over the years in which I had been given such detailed sight that I sometimes had a difficult time knowing what to do with the information. I was still only learning about my gift. The knowledge that came to me was like going to school. Slowly, step by step, I came to accept that I was different from most people I knew. Each vision gave me clearer insight into myself as well as my gift. Once I had a vision of my sister, Carol, driving down a street that was on a hill. It was winter, and I could see that she hit black ice, spun out of control, and went over the embankment. I warned her of the vision, and as a result, she drove very slowly on the hill on her way home from school that day. She did skid on a patch of black ice, but because she was traveling so slowly, she didn't go over the embankment and kept the car under control. Another time, my friend, Nicole, introduced me to her new boyfriend. The next day I saw him clearly on the side of the highway, his car stopped. I then saw him with blood on his face. He was thrown from the car and was pulling himself onto the road from the ditch. There were no other cars involved in the accident. In this case, I couldn't track him or Nicole down to tell them my vision. What was the point of me seeing this if I couldn't help? I found out the following day that the event did in fact take place and he was not seriously injured. My relationship with Darren finally came to an end after 4 years, when I was getting close to legal age. In the past year, one had taken on 3 jobs and was making very good wages for myself. Since the arrangement with Darren was made under extraordinary circumstances, I was more than ready to leave the situation. The adjustment to single life was exhilarating. I lived on my own for a short time and then found a roommate. Her name was Sally. We were the same age, and she too came from a difficult family life. A mutual friend introduced us, and it didn't take long for us to become the best of friends. We lived together for just under a year before she moved to Vancouver with her boyfriend, Stuart. Shortly after my 19th birthday, I started to go out with my friends. I had a lot of fun after years of being isolated. I felt like a whole new person. It was my first taste of being really alive, free from family and Darren. Over the next few months, several incidents happened that again would bring my gifts to the surface. Around this time, Janice began living with me as the situation at home became unbearable for her. A couple of weeks later, she attended a friend's wedding.